Yeah. No. It is not my Friday. Sometimes I deke you with that when I'll roll out on a Thursday with that and say a tremendous Friday to you. I'm not doing that. I'm just hyped up. Yeah. I am hyped up. It is an amazing day to talk. Lots to cover. Let's get it. Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. I'm live in Southern California. And as you know, this program is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Very good show for you today. Wild, wild game last night in the World Series, which I will get to momentarily. But let me set this up for you first. Coming up next segment, I've got the head coach of the Vegas Golden Knights, Gerard Gallant. We are talking hockey again. Back-to-back days. Gerard Gallant joins me in about 15 minutes. Also in hour number one, we are front-loading. In hour number one, I've got UFC heavyweight Derek Lewis. Second hour is wide open. In hour number three, good friend of the program, Eddie Olczyk, is in studio. NBC Sports Hockey Analyst. He's an NBC Horse Racing Analyst, and he's got a new book out. Edzo joins me in studio in hour number three. Speaking of hockey, I've got podcast episode 102 with Tom Laidlaw, former New York Ranger and LA King, also participated in Survivor this season. Tom Laidlaw is going to join me for the podcast, which we'll push out a little bit later on. Telephone number is toll free, 1-800-636-8686. Follow me on Twitter at Jim Rome. Email me at Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. All right, let's not waste time. Let's get back to it. Last night, I think we'd all agree that going into last night, this had not been the most amazing World Series. Hell, I think we'd all agree the first five games were not that good at all. But game six was unbelievable. Hell of a game, an insane ride, and a game that broke into two separate parts. There was what happened before the incident, and then there was what happened after the incident. And if you don't know what the incident was, I'm not sure what game you were watching. Washington went into last night's game having lost three straight at home. And it wasn't just that they lost three straight. It's how they lost. They got hammered over the weekend. They went from being up 2-0 to down 3-2. And they scored a total of three runs in those three games. Seemed like they had lost their mojo completely. And then they had to come back and deal with Justin Verlander in Houston and a crowd that was insane, knowing they needed just one win to finish. Nats needed that win to stay alive. But the thing about the Nats, as badly as they played, even with their backs to the wall, you know they'd have it no other way. They live for that. They love that. To be the man, you have to beat the man, and they probably love the fact that they were going to have to beat arguably the best American League pitcher of a generation, and they were going to have to do it on the road to stay alive. But again, I'm going to say they love that. They love it because, as I tweeted last night, these are some BMFs, and they came out firing. Their leadoff hitter, Trey Turner. And if you didn't know about this guy before, he is the ultimate gamer. This guy is so tough. He gets on base. Adam Eaton moves him over, and then Anthony Rendon comes up.
Hit with the knees bent, almost out of a crouch. The bat chest high. The pitch swinging a ground ball through the open right side and into right center field, a base hit. Rounding third is Trey Turner. He comes in to score. And the Nationals accomplished what they were after at the start of this game with their game plan. Score early, get on the board.
Nats Radio, 1-0 Nats. Remember those names, Turner, Eaton, Rendon, because they're going to get mentioned a time or two again. But then the Astros come right back. Their bats woke up in the district. They started playing Astros baseball again, and that continued in the bottom of the first. George Springer leads off with a double. He goes to third on a wild pitch, and Jose Altuve brings him home with a sack fly. Michael Brantley strikes out. Then comes Alex Bregman.
Pitch on the way. And that is drilled deep to left field. And you can kiss it goodbye. Into the Landry's Crawford boxes. Alex Bregman goes yard. And the Astros go up 2-1.
My man, Alex Bregman. That's Astros Radio. 2-1 Astros. But the most important part of that home run was not the home run or the run that went on the board. It was the run around the bases and the fact that Alex Bregman achieved godlike status by carrying the bat with him down to first base and trying to hand it to the first base coach. That is incredible. Bat flips are so regular season, but the bat carry is now. And the bat carry is awesome. Bat flips are tired. The bat carry is wired. And yes, I know the red asses who police the game are not going to like that. I just don't give a crap. You're playing at home. Game 6 of the World Series. You just went yard. I don't care if this guy runs back to the on-deck circle and grabs a second bat for the journey. I don't care if this guy went Barry Bonds, pirouette in the box, flap down a la Jeffrey Leonard, and then skipped around the bases backwards and took 5 minutes to do it. The only problem that I had with the bat carry was that Alex Bregman apologized for it.
It's not how I was raised to play the game. I just let my emotions get the best of me, and I'm sorry for doing that.
Alex, sorry. Apology not accepted. I'm not hearing it. I'm not having it. Because you have nothing to apologize for, hero. Because that was awesome. Carrying a bat down to first base is not ruining the game. It's improving the game. He didn't disrespect the game. He fixed the game. And if you don't believe me, ask one of the guys that he allegedly was showing up. National stud, Juan Soto. He saw it and he loved it. Quote, "It's pretty cool. I want to do it too. That's what I think when I saw that. I get the opportunity and I do the same thing." End quote. And he did. So, if the most electric guy in the other dugout was not offended by it, why should anyone else be? The answer is, you shouldn't. So, the Astros have the lead. That house was rocking. And if Houston were playing any other team, you might have been able to start to count down the outs until the champagne. But again, the Nats are not any other team. We know this. And in the fifth, Adam Eaton did this.
Now Verlander winds and delivers. Eaton swings and hits one to deep right. Down the line. Going. Going. Gone. Goodbye. A game-tying solo home run for Adam Eaton on an 0-1 pitch from Justin Verlander.
And then he gets back to the dugout. He finds this guy, Howie Kendrick, and he does this. It's like the best baseball celebration. Rev the engine, shift the gears. Oh, and speaking of high speed, one out later, a ball left the yard at light speed.
Lander straight up as he takes signs, now into his wide. Here's the pitch. Soto swings and hits one high and deep to right. This is way back. Going, going, and gone. Goodbye. Into the second deck. A tremendous home run for Juan Soto.
Juan Jose Soto, the inventor of the Soto shuffle. Man, that was not a home run either. That was just a joke. A complete and utter joke. A complete and utter joke that a guy that young is crushing baseballs like that. And yes, the only thing better than the home run was the fact that he did carry his bat down to first base. So for all you haters, red assers, take a seat, meat. I've got no time for people complaining about that. Besides, it's not like Bregman and Soto just invented that last night. Bartolo Colon was doing that years ago. He's the real OG of the bat carry. So, 3-2 Nats in the fifth. But the Astros came right back in the bottom of the inning. Runners in second and third. One out. But Steven Strasburg gets Altuve to strike out and Brantley to ground out. And notice, that's the first time I've mentioned Strasburg's name. But it won't be the last. But as much as you want to think the last night was about Strasburg or Verlander or Bregman or Soto, you're wrong. Because here comes Samuel Woodford Holbrook. And he's about to yank the entire spotlight for himself. Because the only thing worse than knowing an umpire's name is knowing an umpire's government. And if I'm doing that, you know there's a damn good reason. A damn good chance that someone in blue made a potential World Series changing mistake. Top of the seventh, runner on first, Brad Peacock pitching for Houston, Trey Turner at the plate, roll it. Man, roll the hell out of this.
First pitch to Turner, and a full swing and a dribbler up the third base side. This is going to be a tough chance. Peacock hurries his throw, and the ball gets away. The ball through Gurriel down the right field line. Gomes is going to head for third and Turner to second. as Gurriel's glove got knocked off, and they're going to call Turner out for being out of the baseline.
Oh, my.
So instead of second and third, they're going to send Gomes back to first, and Turner is out for being out of the baseline. And Davey Martinez is livid at Sam Holbrook.
Turner sprints down the line. He gets to first as the ball is coming in. It gets away from Gurriel at first. He goes to second. Yan Gomes goes to third. Suddenly, the Nats are cooking. Runners on second and third. Nobody out. Except that's not what happened because the home plate umpire, Sam Holbrook, called Turner out for runner interference. He went rule 509 A11 on everybody. Turner is out. Gomes goes back to first. Hell yes. That's awesome. How very umpire of them. I know you were enjoying this game between the two teams, but what about us? What about the umps? Are you paying and watching to see players play? Or are you there to see the umps ump? Am I right? So, it was time for the umps to take over, and they did. And Nationals manager Dave Martinez was raging, and so were a number of baseball players on Twitter. Quickly, on Twitter, Jake Arrieta, quote, "That is an absolutely awful call. What are we doing?" Travis Shaw on Twitter, "Dumbest rule in Major League Baseball. Absolutely no reason for that to be called ever." Delino DeShields on Twitter, "You can't make that call in the World Series. The ball took the first baseman off the base." Gaucho Michael Young on Twitter, "That is a complete and total embarrassment." Gaucho's right. It was a complete and total embarrassment. But if there's one thing you can bet on, it's the fact that the umpires will make complete and total embarrassments of themselves. It's their brand. Like, what was Turner supposed to do in that situation? Where was he supposed to go? What did he even do wrong? And yes, I know it's a judgment call, and judgment calls are not reviewable, and that it's a rule. Except it's a bad rule. In fact, it's possibly the worst rule. And it's a rule that should have been changed a long time ago. So it does not turn into a controversial moment in Game 6 of the World Series, like it just did. You know the argument? Would be that Turner was inside the baseline, but the base itself is inside the baseline. The shortest route to the base is running directly at it, which is inside the baseline. And then the Nats would tell you the only reason why Turner ran into Gurriel's glove and was hit by the ball was because the throw was bad. And wasn't Turner already on first base when he hit the glove? So where was the guy supposed to be? And Dave Martinez was raging. Man, I can't even get through the entire open. I have so much to say about that. All right, so I will finish that thought momentarily. Yes, he got kicked out of the game. No, a manager should never get kicked out of a World Series game. But can you blame this guy for reacting the way he did? And even worse, Joe Torre had the best seat in the entire house and did nothing. And that's his job. So I will get to all of that. This much I do know. We have ourselves a Game 7. We've got a Game 7. And that was an amazing game last night. So, more thoughts on Game 6, a preview of Game 7, the NFL trade deadline. If Game 6 lived up to all the hype, the trade deadline was the most disappointing thing ever. All of that still ahead. Gerard Gallant when we come back. Hiring can be a slow process. Cafe Altura COO Dylan Miskowitz needed to hire a director of coffee for his organic coffee company, but was having trouble finding qualified applicants, so he switched to ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter does not depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its technology identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. Dylan posted that job on ZipRecruiter and was impressed by how quickly he had a great candidate apply. In fact, several of them. He also used ZipRecruiter's candidate rating feature so he could focus on the most relevant ones. That's how Dylan found his new director of coffee in just a few days. With results like that, it is no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the very first day. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Rome, ZipRecruiter.com/ROME. ZipRecruiter.com/Rome. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Obviously, Game 6, all the rage. I could not even get through my entire open. I had so many thoughts on that. More on that later on. Let's change up. I want to talk some hockey. We are joined now by the head coach of the Vegas Golden Knights. Third season with Vegas. He is a Jack Adams Award winner. He led the Golden Knights to a Western Conference title in his first season. Vegas currently in second in the Pacific Division. They are hosting Montreal tomorrow night, 10 p.m. Eastern. Gerard Gallant is my guest. Gerard, great to have you back. How are you?
I'm great. How you doing?
Good, good. So you're coming off a win over Anaheim where you got a really big performance from the line of Nicholas Roy, Ryan Reeves, William Carrier. Let me jump right into that. You and I have talked about Reeves in the past and what he means in terms of physicality. But when you're getting scoring from that line, how special is that?
Yeah, that helps our team a lot. I mean, they're a really good forechecking line, and they're an aggressive line, and they finally make contact and make the game easier for other players. But when they're putting the puck at the net, and, you know, like I said, Reeves scored in that game, Wash scored in that game, Carrier had some great chances. So that they're a big part of our team, but when they can score goals, they definitely help us win.
Now, on top of that, you said your guys were kind of pissed off after that Colorado game. When they showed up the way they did against Anaheim, did it feel more like the style and the game that you're used to playing?
Well, exactly. I mean, we got a real good hockey team, a skilled hockey team, but we had to bring our game level up, and I thought that was by far our best game of the season, and we just got to continue to do that. I mean, it was a simple game. It was a hard-working game. It was doing the dirty things in the corner and winning those battles, and that's what you do to win hockey games in this league. The teams are so close together now, and the parity in the league is unbelievable, so when you compete and play hard, you get a good chance to win every night.
Gerard Gallant is joining us. You know, you mentioned how skilled your team is. Bruins head coach Bruce Cassidy was also talking about how heavy your team is. Now, I know speed is important to you. You want to play fast. But how important is it to have that heaviness? And then you want to make sure your opponents know your guys are going to hit. So how do you balance those two things?
Yeah, no, and that's a big part of it. Like you said, I think we got some big, strong guys through our lineup. We're a heavy team, definitely in the back end. We got some big, heavy guys, and I think it's an important part of the game. We don't play a mean game or a very physical game. We play a tough game that, you know, you win the battles in front of the net, you win the puck battles, and that makes you play fast. I mean, we don't go out there and try and finish every check we do. Ryan Reeves and that line, they got a role to play, and they play it real well. But our top players, you know, they want to win battles. They want to go hard to the net, and but they want to play a fast game. And you can't play a real fast game when you're trying to finish checks or getting checks all the time. So our guys know their roles in their team and what they do and what works best for our group. And that's a fine line. Like you said, you want to play physical, but you also want to play fast.
Gerard Gallant joining us once again. Now, you've gotten off to a really nice start, and you're doing this mostly without defenseman Nate Schmidt, who is expected to return shortly. How much does he change things, both defensively and with his ability to transition from defense to offense and jump into the play?
Yeah, Nate's a big, big part of our group, obviously. And, you know, give credit to the other guys. We missed Nate from, I think he played one period for us this season so far, so we missed him for quite a bit. But, you know, he just makes the game so much easier. He puts people in the position they're supposed to be in. Now he'll move up with their top pair and play against the other team's best lines, and he moves the puck real well. He's a great skater, so he does everything for us, and he just makes our team that much better. So, you know, it might be tough on him his first couple of games once he gets back, and hopefully he'll have a good practice today, and we're hoping he gets clear for tomorrow, but we'll have to wait and see.
We're talking some hockey, Gerard Gallant, my guest. Back in February, the team made that move for Mark Stone. You had him down the stretch last season. He made an immediate impact. But now that you've had even more time with him and the entire offseason with him, how unique is he?
He's unbelievable. He's a great player. He does everything right for us. He's a good team leader. Everything I heard about him is exactly what, you know, is exactly what he does every day for our group. It's not just, the, you know, playing the games and being a top player in the league. He's a great person. He comes to the rink. He wants to get better every day. He makes his teammates better. He's a fun-loving guy. So, you know what? It's an unbelievable player for us to get. And like I said, he makes our team so much better.
Right, so if we're talking about special guys, a guy that you and I have talked about also in the past, Marc-Andre Fleury, 8-3, 2.3 goals against, you know, status quo for this guy. But what has he meant to you and to this organization from day one?
Well, we wouldn't be 8-5 right now this year, I'll tell you, because we haven't played our best hockey, and you know, our record's pretty good considering, and Marc-Andre Fleury's been outstanding this year. But for the whole package, I mean, the day we got him in the expansion draft, you hear nothing but great things about the guy. He comes to the rink. He's our leader. He's our character guy, and he just loves to have fun. He keeps our group loose, real loose, and he gets them ready to play games, and like I said, I see why he won 3 Stanley Cups, and he's such a good goaltender, but he's a better person than he is a goaltender. He just he comes to the rink every day, and it's not a job. It's what he wants to do.
So we're talking Golden Knights hockey. From an organizational standpoint, you and I have also talked in the past. And it seems like every time you and I talk, I come away with this notion or this feeling that you and this team are a perfect fit in the sense that the style of play and personality of the players are so similar to yours. So in the salary cap era, managing a roster is a constant challenge. You can't always keep all the guys that you want. But how much have you and George McPhee focused on defining what it means to be a Golden Knight and how you want your guys to play?
Yeah, and that started from the first day I was hired with George and Kelly. You know, we talked about it all the time. We want leadership. We want character. We want good people in our organization. And, you know, that was the first thing about the expansion draft. We wanted to get good people. You know, there's not many bad people in the NHL, but we wanted that was a priority for us, character. But I think the style of our group, we started from day one. We wanted to play hard. We wanted to play fast. We wanted to be a big, heavy team, and we don't want to get pushed around. And so we got the team that we think can do that. And like I said, the first year went unbelievable well. Nobody expected that, including myself. And from that point on, I think there's a, you know, our ownership's been unbelievable to our players, and he supports everybody at our organization. And from the top down bottom, it's been fun. It's been great. And, you know, we just want to keep it rolling. And it's been a fun 2.5 years. And like I said, the biggest thing is let's just keep it going. Let's look one day at a time and then get ready for your next opponent.
So what about those 2.5 years? Now, to your point, that first year was absolutely amazing. I mean, unprecedented for a season, the kind of season that probably was beyond just about anybody's wildest expectations. You follow that up with another strong season, but one that ended a little bit earlier in the playoffs. So what was that experience like? Was it more painful than getting so close, or essentially is any loss painful no matter when it happens?
You know what? Getting to the finals and losing was as much pain as I ever had in my life in professional sports. You know, that was real tough because you're so close and you're right there. And, you know, Washington was a great team, but it wasn't a team that we couldn't have beaten. You know, we would have played our best hockey. And, you know, you got to give them credit. They played incredible hockey that year, and they won it, and they deserved to win it. But and last year was a different experience. It was tough. It was the first round. We're battling with a real good San Jose team. And, you know, it was going back and forth. And to lose like that, it was real tough on our group. But you know what? Losing makes you tougher and makes you better. And hopefully we'll rebound this year and we'll be hungry again. And then, you know, get an opportunity to make the playoffs. And that's what the goal is right now.
Gerard Gallant, my guest. One final thought. I know you're not going to make it about you. You never want to. But earlier this year, you did coach your 500th career NHL game. For somebody who started out coaching with the Summerside Capitals of the Maritime Junior Hockey League, what does it mean to pass 500 games as an NHL head coach?
Well, I've been real fortunate. I've been real lucky in my life, you know, to play 600 games in the NHL as a player and to be able to be assistant coach and be a head coach. It's a dream come true because hockey's been my life from the time I was 16 years old. So it's been fortunate. If you can't play the game, I think coaching's the next best. And I come to the rink every day a little bit like Marc-Andre Fleury. I have fun. I enjoy my time here, and it's the best job in the world.
He is a Jack Adams Award winner, led the Golden Knights to a Western Conference title in his first season. They're currently in second in the Pacific. Gerard Gallant, my guest. Gerard, I always appreciate the conversation. Thanks so much. Great to have you back.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it.
That was fun. Thank you. Always good to talk hockey, and especially Golden Knights hockey. 1-800-636-8686.
I love when you talk hockey.
You do? Because we'll be talking a lot more hockey today. In fact, more hockey than ever before. That's Gerard Gallant. Eddie Olczyk will be in studio in hour three. And former NHL legend turned Survivor participant Tom Laidlaw is the guest of podcast episode 102. So I've never talked so much hockey in one day. Jared Bednar came on yesterday, Colorado head coach. So we are talking a lot of hockey. Not only is this a show where we talk hockey intelligently, it's not just the postseason, and it's not just when something bad happens. We talk hockey all season long and do it as well as anybody who's not, like, right in it. I pride myself on that. All of that's still ahead. But when we come back, same thing with UFC, MMA. We talk about that very intelligently. Derek Lewis is my guest. And I still need to finish my thoughts on Game 6, take a look at Game 7, and more. But first,
live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back. I am Jim Rome. Great to be with you. All right, telephone number is toll free, 1-800-636-8686. Right now we are joined by a UFC heavyweight. He's 21-7, 19 wins via finish, tied for the most knockouts in UFC heavyweight history. He is going to take part in UFC 244 in Madison Square Garden. It is Saturday night, 10 p.m. on pay-per-view. We are joined now by Derek Lewis. Derek, great to have you on. How are you?
Oh, man, thanks for having me. Always great to be on your show.
Derek, always great to have you on this show. All right, so we're a couple of days from you making your return to Madison Square Garden. You were there last year for UFC 230 against Daniel Cormier. The result did not go the way you would have liked, but how fired up are you to get back to MSG on Saturday?
I'm real anxious to get back in there, man. I haven't been anxious to fight in years, you know, and this is one of the fights that I'm real anxious to get back in there. I'm excited for. I took everything serious, the whole training camp, my diet, the preparation for it, just everything been on point.
We're talking to Derek Lewis. So, Derek, when you talk about the fact that you have not been as eager in years, how much of that has to do with your health? For instance, it's your first fight after having surgery on your knee, so everybody's clear. We're talking about a situation where your meniscus and MCL were torn, your ACL was barely hanging on, and you've been dealing with that for a while. The story goes that you first heard a pop back at UFC 184, and that was in 2015. Is that how long it's been, and how were you able to stand, much less fight, with an injury like that? Derek.
Hello?
Yeah, Derek, can you hear me?
Yeah. Derek.
Yeah, so your knee.
Bad connection.
Yeah, yeah. How bad was your knee?
Oh, my knee was pretty bad. You know, it just kept getting worse and worse. Whenever I fought DC, that every time he touched my leg, I just fall down because I couldn't stand on it anymore. And for that training, I was still in the best shape of my life by going into the DC fight. But my knee was the only factor in that one that kept giving out on me. And whenever I fought Junior, yeah, I couldn't, the whole training camp, I couldn't go forward or go backwards. So I had to stand in one spot, one place, and hit pads like that. I couldn't even do the Stairmaster like I usually do.
Derek Lewis, my guest. You know, Derek, to that point, a lot of fighters in your situation would have turned down fights in order to get that knee taken care of. But even as it got worse, you still did fight Junior Dos Santos. Your coach, Bob Perez, was not a fan of the idea. He was even in favor of you withdrawing. Why was it so important to you to go ahead and fight, even though you were nowhere near 100%?
Yeah, we had got the MRI results back before, like 2 weeks before the Junior fight, and the UFC was worried that I was going to pull. I told him I wasn't going to pull because like 2 weeks before the fight, and so they renegotiated my contract, and so that's one of the big reasons why I took the fight with Junior.
So now you finally are healthy. You've done all this on a busted up knee. How much more effective do you expect to be this weekend as a fighter now that you are healthy?
I feel a completely different type of fighter because I can move around now and I could train a lot harder and a lot more than what I have been in the past. So, you know, everyone should see a better performance, a better fighter out of myself too. This Saturday.
Derek Lewis fighting this Saturday. All right, so you're going to fight Blagoy Ivanov. When you look at him and you prepare for him, what kind of a fighter do you see?
I think he's more of a fighter like myself. Whenever I look at him, because he doesn't set anything up. He's just going there and trying to look for big punches. But the only thing about him is that he gets hit a lot. You know, I don't get hit that much that often, you know, but he gets hit a whole lot. And I don't believe that he could take a punch from me the way he fights.
Derek Lewis joining us. So he can't take your best shot. Do you feel like, has he ever been in the cage with a fighter like you and the kind of problems that you can cause for him?
No, I don't believe so. You know, I know for sure that I'm a unique type of fighter because I still have that same killer instinct in the last 10 seconds of a fight. It doesn't matter how tired I am. I can still throw hard just like it was the first round of a fight. So you got to always be cautious with anything I throw.
Derek Lewis fighting this weekend at Madison Square Garden. Now, Derek, you become a huge star, and not just because of your fighting ability, but because of your personality. I'm curious, what's it been like to blow up that quickly and to blow up like that in a short period of time? Does it feel kind of strange to you, or does it feel like, no, I've been working, grinding for a long time, I'm not an overnight sensation? What's it feel like?
Yeah, it's been crazy because I got movie deals and TV show deals and stuff like that, all because, you know, my personality. So it's been real cool that everyone really starting to take notice of it because I've always been the same type of guy, you know, got a crazy sense of humor. And so it's pretty cool, though.
I wonder about this. Like, you told Ariel Helwani that Mike Tyson was hitting you up. How do you handle that? Like, when Mike Tyson reaches out, do you take that call? Does he need to go through the proper channels and contact your people before he can actually get to you? How'd you handle that one?
Yeah, I totally have to call my manager first to see whatever he wanted. So he never called my manager. So that's fine, though. He won't go through the proper channels. That's fine.
That's tremendous. So what do you think? What do you think Mike wanted, if you had to guess?
No, they came out and told me that he just wanted me to be on his podcast, I guess.
You see, man, you got to go through the right channels. You got to go through the right channels. I went through the right channels. I got you to come on this show. Come on, Mike. Go through the right channels. It's not that hard, right?
Yeah.
Derek, you got some interviews today, but how do you go about approaching the rest of the week before the fight?
Really, my heart rate is, like, super good right now. Right now, my heart rate is at 52. And so just really just keeping it as low as possible and just keeping the pace, like, just really walking on treadmills. That's it. Just keeping everything up and running, you know. But I'm ready to go. I'm happy.
It's Wednesday. It's go time. Well, nearly. He's 21-7. He's got 19 wins via finish. Tied for the most knockouts in UFC heavyweight history, UFC 244. You've got Masvidal and Diaz on Saturday. You've got Lewis and Ivanov as well. It's going to be a big night. Derek, great to have you back. I appreciate the interview. Good luck this weekend. We'll be watching.
Yes, well, sir. Thank you for having me.
You got it. Derek, good talking to you again. Derek Lewis. And you've got Masvidal and Diaz, too. That fight's still on. We talked a lot about Nate Diaz. Remember, Nate Diaz had that kind of strange drug test come back. And Nate immediately said, I'm not on roids. You all are. And normally when a guy tests positive or has some sort of anomaly or aberration, they're quick to say, not me. I didn't do it. Or they're quick to say, I've never knowingly taken anything illegal, or they're quick to say it was tainted. I got tainted meat. I got a tainted supplement. He didn't say any of those things. Nate said, it's not me. Somebody's trying to get me. They're out to get me. I didn't do it. And sure enough, he didn't do it. And then he said, when they cleared his name and said the fight was on, Nate was still saying things like, yeah, I don't know if it is. I don't know if it is. But luckily it is. Masvidal is the favorite in that fight. All right, so going back to Game 6, and I did not finish my thoughts on that in the open, but I'm looking for your reaction. Like I said, the umpires, it's almost like they were just sitting around like, you know, no one's talking about us. Do you tune in to see the players play, or do you tune in to see the umps ump? And then right around the 7th, the umps started to ump. And one more thing about that. Worse still to me, when that all went down last night, Joe Torre, the guy who's in charge of umpires and rules, was not in New York, but rather he was at the game. He was there, best seat in the house when the incident went down. He saw the entire thing. If anybody could straighten this whole thing out, it's larger than life, holier than thou, perfect Joe Torre, right? Wrong. Apparently, Torre really didn't want anything to do with it. And Trey Turner could not believe what he was saying because he saw Torre and was pointing him out to the umps.
The umpires here and those back in New York. And you can see what Trey Turner's saying. Joe Torre is right here. Just ask
Joe
him.
Torre's
That's Fox. Can you make out what Trey said? He's sitting. In talking about Torre, Trey Turner said, he's sitting with his head down, trying not to look up. What an absolutely perfect line. And I can't say that I'm shocked that Turner caught him trying to keep his head down. I'm not sure what Torre was doing, but it sure doesn't sound like he was looking to help. Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah!
You're the guy. You're right there. It happened right under your nose. You've got nothing to say. You're not going to do anything. What are they paying you to do then? So I'll get to what happened right after the call in a moment because that deserves its own take. But in between innings, the umpires took a bad situation and then they made it even worse by ejecting Davey Martinez. I do understand the argument that a manager should never get thrown out of a World Series game. The Martinez has got to keep his head and cannot get thrown out of that game. But this guy was raging. Yeah, I know. He was raging and needed to be held back. I understand that. But when you consider the fact that it was in the middle of the seventh inning stretch and Take Me Out to the Ball Game was playing in the background, it's even more insane that they ran him when they ran him. And Martinez was understandably upset. But that's on the umps to calm that situation down. I don't know what they said to him, but it sure didn't look like it was, hey, that was a judgment call. We're sorry you can't review it. That one's on us, Skip. No, I don't think that's what they said. They were bringing kerosene to that fire, like they do every fire. As Gaucho Michael Young tweeted, throwing Dave out there is garbage.
Garbage.
This is the World Series. Emotions can, should, and will run high. Any decent umpire should turn around and walk away. Simple. End quote. Right. The Gaucho's always right, Michael Young. And the next fight that an ump walks away from will be the first. There are a lot of red asses in baseball, but there aren't too many asses redder than an umpire's. If they can get into a fight, they will. If they can make it about themselves, they will. And remember this. This isn't some hack crew of guys that they just happen to throw together. These are supposedly the best of the best umpires. Which leads me to my final thought. Is there any way we can boot up the robots in time for Game 7? Because when we're talking about a world championship, the last thing we want to be talking about are the umpires. Yet that was the first thing that we were talking about late last night. And the absolutely last thing that we want to be talking about tonight. That better not happen tonight. It's like one game after Lance Barksdale let the world feel his presence, Samuel Woodford Holbrook said, "Hold my beer, buddy. Hold my beer. Watch this." Man, who in the hell knows what Jim Wolf has got in store tonight? Hopefully nothing other than calling a good game. All right, so second hour is wide open. Those are my thoughts on that side of that game. I've got more thoughts on the other, and that's the Nats. I got to give them some bleeping credit. Not that I haven't already, but I've got to give them some more bleeping credit. Coming up in hour number three, for real.
I mean, for real.
Eddie Olczyk in studio in the third hour. Also, my thoughts on the biggest letdown in quite some time, the NFL trade deadline. 1-800-636-8686. Hit me up right now. Phone call is next hour.